My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Global outrage grows over Russia's alleged war crimes in Ukraine. How the West is responding. Plus, Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz is back on the job with plans to suspend share buybacks.
He says that that capital would be better used to make the business stronger. And so he's taking this unusual move to cancel those buybacks.
How the move fits into Starbucks' business strategy. Plus, why hashtag van life is getting hashtag expensive. It's Monday, April 4th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. President Biden is calling for a war crimes trial against Russian President Vladimir Putin following allegations of atrocities perpetrated in Ukraine, including the Kyiv suburb of Bucha.
We have to continue to provide Ukraine with the weapons they need to continue the fight, and we have to gather all the detail so this can be an actual, have a war crime trial. This guy is brutal, and what's happening in Bucha is outrageous, and everyone's seen it.
As we reported this morning, more than 100 civilians were found buried in mass graves in the city after Russian troops withdrew last week. On Sunday, Human Rights Watch also released a report documenting instances of rape and summary executions in Bucha and other cities. The Russian Defense Ministry has dismissed reports of widespread killing of civilians in Bucha, calling them, quote, another provocation by Ukraine. Response to the alleged war crimes has been swift. Officials in the European Commission, the EU's executive body, said they were looking to see how to make a new sanctions package, which was expected this week, stronger in light of the reports. Germany and France have announced plans to expel dozens of Russian diplomats. Meanwhile, the U.S. is working with Ukraine and other European countries to organize a United Nations vote to push Russia out of the UN Human Rights Council. The step would be largely symbolic. The council shapes international public opinion, but it doesn't have enforcement power. Moscow is largely insulated from the international war crimes prosecutions due to its lack of participation in other international bodies and its veto on the UN Security Council. U.S. Ambassador to the UN Linda Thomas-Greenfield said she would bring up Russia's actions at the Security Council on Tuesday. Tesla CEO Elon Musk has disclosed that he has a 9% stake in Twitter, turning one of the social media company's most famous users into its largest shareholder. Musk's stake in the company is even larger than company co-founder and former CEO Jack Dorsey. The type of regulatory form he used to disclose his stake marks him as a passive investor with no intention to change or influence control of the company. But our reporter Sarah Needleman says big investors usually don't just sit idly by.
They have a tendency to shake things up. They may ask for different board directors. They may themselves take a seat. They may look to push a CEO out. And, you know, certainly Twitter knows what that's like. They had activist investor Elliott Management took a stake in the company 2 years ago. It nominated four directors to the board, and it did push for the replacement of Mr. Dorsey. And so it's possible that Mr. Musk could do that. And he's the kind of person who's not afraid to take chances.
Neither Musk nor Twitter responded to requests for comment. You can hear more about what Musk's move means for Twitter on our sister podcast, Tech News Briefing, tomorrow. The Senate begins a series of votes this week on Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's nomination to the Supreme Court. The Judiciary Committee deadlocked on its vote today, forcing a full vote on the Senate floor, where a simple majority of 51 votes will be needed to move her nomination forward. The final confirmation vote could come as early as Thursday. All 50 Democrats are expected to support her, along with at least one Republican, Senator Susan Collins of Maine. If confirmed, Brown would be the first Black woman to sit on the nation's highest court. And in his annual letter to shareholders, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon said the U.S. economy is facing some big risks and that he's preparing for dramatic upheavals. The head of the nation's largest bank offered a mostly upbeat view of the economy's health. But he warned that the combination of war in Ukraine and inflation could slow the nation's recovery from the pandemic. Dimon also warned that the Federal Reserve could move interest rates higher than markets expect, leading to consternation and volatility. And he disclosed that J.P. Morgan could lose about $1 billion over time on its business in Russia. Coming up, Starbucks former CEO Howard Schultz is back at the helm for a third time leading the company. Why suspending stock buybacks was at the top of his to-do list to help the bottom line. That's after the break.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Starbucks was built as a third place between work and home, where people could hang out, study, work, and sip coffee for hours. That changed during the pandemic, when many locations shut their doors or shifted to a to-go model. Now, like many other companies, Starbucks is looking to reinvigorate its business. And it's doing that by tapping former CEO Howard Schultz to once again lead the company, at least on an interim basis. He came back for a second time in 2008 to shepherd the company through the financial crisis. Today, on his first day back at the helm, Schultz announced in a letter to employees that Starbucks would suspend billions of dollars in share buybacks to help free up money to invest in its stores and workers. So, what does that mean for the company's strategy to reemerge from the pandemic? Wall Street Journal restaurants reporter Heather Haddon joins me now with more details. Hi, Heather. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
So, let's start with today's announcement about share buybacks. What are the details here, and how exactly does Schultz envision this step working for the business?
Yeah, this was a surprising move. So the company had put its buyback program on hold after the pandemic hit, like many restaurants and other companies did when they were trying to preserve profit and just, you know, keep their stores running. Starbucks's business has improved considerably since the pandemic first hit, and they actually had a record sales year last year. So the outgoing CEO, Kevin Johnson, in October told investors that they were going to restart their share buyback program. It was going to be a three-year, $20 billion program, and they were going to start buying back shares. They were also, you know, investing in other means for shareholders, and this certainly cheered Wall Street. But since then, you know, a lot has happened for the company. The company also is facing a lot of inflation and other costs, and so Howard Schultz, on his first day returning to Starbucks, CEO, said that he's going to suspend the share buyback program and instead look to invest this money back into its workers and stores. How exactly that is going to work is still being determined. Part of that is going to be a conversation that he's having with employees and other company staff in coming weeks, but he says that that capital would be better used to make the business stronger. And so he's taking this unusual move to cancel those buybacks.
Now, Starbucks has taken this step before back in 2020 during the height of the pandemic. How did that work out back then?
It was not unusual back then for companies to be suspending these buyback programs because, you know, no one knew what was going to happen. And for a company like Starbucks, I mean, their business was really driven by people going into their cafes. I mean, they have been able to pivot very well to to-go sales, but it was a tough time. And, you know, the company stock after the pandemic hit, I mean, it certainly took a hit, but I think they were in pretty good company. I mean, there was many, many companies that had suspended buybacks. Then now many of those companies have resumed buybacks. I mean, that seems to be a trend overall that a lot of companies are bringing these back just because, you know, it's a rocky time in stocks and to just kind of improve investor sentiment. But Starbucks is going its own way on this.
And as you allude to, stock buybacks have come under criticism, particularly in Washington. What are the major arguments against companies using these?
President Biden, Democrats, they really have been skeptical about companies using this cash in the way they are. I mean, they say that it can end up propping up executive compensation because the value of shares becomes so much richer typically when this happens. So in the end, you know, the shareholders are benefiting and executives potentially are benefiting, but what does this mean for the company and, you know, workers and others? So here we are, the company does seem to be, you know, seeming to listen to that and to some of those criticisms.
And this is coming at a time when Starbucks is facing a growing unionization push from its U.S. baristas. How is the company navigating that?
So this is very challenging. Something like 170 of the 9,000 Starbucks stores have filed for union elections. Several have already voted to unionize. So this is, you know, a threat that the company really hasn't faced to this degree before. Howard Schultz does have a long history of having opinions about unions. You know, his basic stance is that the company should be investing in its workers and its pays and benefits, meaning that they don't need a union. They don't need that intermediary between them and their workers. So this is potentially really quite a threat to the company and its business model when they've really tried to be very close to their workers, tried to have a lot of flexibility over their workers and their shifts and where they work in a market. And so, you know, Howard Schultz did go to Buffalo in November before those stores voted for unionization and give those workers kind of a pep talk about the company, its history, its values, who he was, the benefits that they've invested in. And two of those three initial Buffalo stores that voted to unionize did in fact do so. So two of them did vote to unionize. So he, I think, needs to make a new appeal to these workers and reintroduce himself and introduce himself for the first time to some workers who maybe who have no idea who Howard Schultz is.
Schultz is also facing plenty of challenges as he begins steering the business again, from geopolitical uncertainty due to the war in Ukraine to rising inflation here at home and abroad. What can you tell us about his plans to tackle these big issues to right the business?
Yeah, so far, I mean, this is his first day, so it's very early days. I mean, he's basically said that he is coming back to the company in a time of need. So he said in the letter that he sent this morning that the company and other companies just face unprecedented challenges these days, whether it's, yeah, supply chain, COVID, geopolitical. And this is really a time to invest back in the business, invest back in its people, and try to, you know, bring some of those, that spirit back and try to uplift some of the workers.
Heather, what is the state of Starbucks business right now as we're still emerging from the pandemic? And as you said, a lot has just fundamentally changed during the pandemic, including customer habits.
Yeah, so Starbucks may be quintessential for the spot where you bring your laptop and sit for hours and hours, but something like 70% of U.S. orders now are taken to go. So that's through a drive-thru, that's mobile order and pickup, that's delivery, which is helping them. Their sales were really quite strong last year, and they are still projecting that they're going to build something like 21,000 new stores globally by 2030. So they emphasize that their model is strong, that they've been able to adapt, but it is, you know, it is a big change from the traditional Starbucks you think of, where you would sit in a couch for hours on end.
That's Wall Street Journal restaurants reporter Heather Haddon. Heather, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks so much.
And finally, indoor restrictions, low gas prices, and the option to work remotely fueled a huge spike in people converting vans and buses into campers. Hashtag van life became a social media trend, but now it's hitting a speed bump. As of Friday, the average cost of a gallon of gas in the U.S. was about $4.22. Our reporter Matt Grossman says people aren't giving up life on the road, but they're spending less time behind the wheel.
So I spoke with a young couple who have started living in a van last summer. Like a lot of people, they were taking advantage of some of the social changes during the pandemic where they could work remotely, and they wanted to sort of take the opportunity to get out and see the country a bit. Gas prices are probably anywhere from 25 to 50% higher than they were when this couple set out on the road. And so they've just been spending a lot more time in campgrounds instead of driving every day, which they might have done last summer. Now they might set up in a campground for a week and kind of spend some more time exploring the area.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.